welcome to a brand new episode of the Traction.gg podcast, where we talk about racing games, sim racing, and racing esports. On this episode, we are joined by Andrew Jeffries, aka Repixelate, and John Weatherall from CGA Studio to talk Formula Retro Racing World Tour. So often, we take the racing game and sim racing scene a bit too seriously. Formula Retro Racing is a vivid, approachable retro driving title that harks back to the times of arcade cabinets. It's just simple fun. While it looks back at the past, it does have some contemporary features, such as virtual reality and online leaderboards. With Andrew being the solo developer of the 2020 original, he and CGA have partnered up for a 2023 sequel, and that's what we're discussing on this particular episode. I should say, this was recorded a month or two ago, and since this conversation, the game is now actually available on PC, Switch and Xbox, with PlayStation following later this month. We did encounter some internet challenges too, which we've tried to edit around, so please bear that in mind. So, without further ado, this is how Formula Retro Racing World Tour was created, and why you should check it out. So, well, first of all, my understanding is that the first game was solely on your own, and then this game, you have got a support. It's more of a collaborative effort, right? So if you just talk me through back to basics, I know you've said it a million times, but just the origins of the first Formula Retro Racing, if that's okay, why you decided to do it and how you created it.
Okay, so the first one actually kind of came about almost by accident. So I was working on a prototype kind of Simcade, I suppose, is the name that seems to be going around these days. Engine, physics type engine for Unity, for actually what was supposed to be a different game.
Oh, okay.
And in order to get it working and test it out, I sort of just implemented a couple of basic tracks with low poly visuals, just as like a white box prototype. And then stuck a couple of videos on Twitter. I think it was early 2020, which went massively viral. And then I've had a quid for the amount of people who said, yeah, this is going to be released. Can I have it? I need it now. I want it now. So I thought, well, okay, I'll add a few more tracks in. I only had 8 tracks, right. Just one part, in fact. It's like absolute MVP, minimal viable product for a game. And I thought, well, just as a laugh, I'll release it on Xbox and Steam, because I had an Xbox developer relationship at the time. And see what happens. This was pretty much so, and then lockdown happened, so probably about 2 weeks into lockdown, I think it was mid-May or something, can't remember exact dates, I think that, so yeah, launched on Xbox, and that did, I mean, I didn't double-check the stats on launch day, to see if it was actually happening, but it just sold, just flew off shelves, essentially.
Brilliant.
Unfortunately, the Steam release didn't do too well, because I designed it for Xbox, wasn't expecting it. I was thinking if it sells a couple of hundred copies, that'd be good. Wasn't expecting anywhere near the numbers it did do. So the Steam version was just a kind of clone of the Xbox. And that didn't do too well initially because it's specifically for Xbox controllers. Didn't really have a controller, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, sadly, a Steam version didn't do too well. If I'd known it was going to be such a success, probably would have concentrated more.
But it's a nice scenario to be in, isn't it? To have that challenge for it to become popular.
So, so it launched with 1 car, 8 tracks. And then, did you guys review the original? I can't remember.
Well, we've definitely done an article on it because I think we existed after the original first came out, if that makes sense. So we did back, and one of my colleagues did like a trying to beat the Monaco-esque track on like the toughest difficulty, and I think he wrote about that.
Yeah, the Monaco track actually I created. That was just my own personal enjoyment.
Nice. Well, that's cool.
It's been probably way too much time accurately modeling all the landmarks and all, in a low poly style.
Yeah, but it came out really nice.
Yeah. So that's the track which everyone talks about, obviously.
Yeah.
So because of a success, I ended up doing a PlayStation version a few months later, and then having to bump into John and his team at Develop Conference down in Brighton. I think it was the following year, and got talking about Switch ports, which came out earlier this year.
Right. I just don't know if you could touch upon that very quickly, John. What was it like, working with Andrew and making it for Switch?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's Switch. The Switch is slightly a challenge because it's a slightly slower machine. So we've got a good, well, I think it's a good frame rate, but it's not always 60 FPS. It's close. It's something we want to remedy in this game if we can. But it plays really well. It's really good fun. And it was a nice, easy, you know, quick, fun thing to do. Everyone liked working on. So yeah, that's always the thing, like, I think. So yeah, no, it's just a nice, I mean, we have done a lot of Switch, probably doing less at the moment, but yeah, so we very much enjoyed that, and it is really good fun. Also, we added merch to it. It didn't change it very much, did we? We added a different leaderboard system, but slightly more detailed leaderboard system. Mm. But apart from that, didn't want to kind of touch Andrew's vision too much in that game. Which then, I suppose, segues into the next game, which is a bit different. But
getting back to the Formula Retro Racing. It was initially just a prototype, but I did manage to squeeze in a few other kind of features that I wanted for like a retro-style racer, because one of the influences was Hotshot Racing, which came out...
I've played that, yep.
Before a week after, it was around about the same time. But at that point, I thought it looks like it had been abandoned, and all the forums online kind of suggested that it had been abandoned. So I thought maybe there's a gap in the market for a low poly retro racer. And then about a month before they announced it was coming out after all. So yeah, there's Hotshot Racing and Horizon Chase.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, that came out at the same time as well.
Yeah, because that was a mobile game initially, wasn't it? And then it became the Turbo was the console, right? So where'd you go from? What's the decision behind making a sequel?
Well, again, because based on the success and the fact that the original version was so limited, I mean, it literally has one car, you could just change the color of it, and 8 tracks and a couple of game modes. It kind of felt right to kind of do it again, but do it properly and make it a game like kind of we really wanted it to be. It's got loads more cars now, many more tracks. Handling's been massively improved. Mm. Oh yes, I think it's actually the whole game's sped up. I think it's 40% faster than the original.
Oh right.
Which makes a massive difference because it's more of an arcadey feel.
It's a bit faster as well, isn't it, generally? Because we speeded the cars up slightly.
And I
can't remember consciously starting work on it though, Andrew. I think we just sort of, I don't remember there was a day we sat down and said we were going to do it. Yep. We wanted to build some tracks, didn't we? And then we sort of went from there. I don't remember there was this big day of realization we were actually even working on it, really.
Yes. I do remember. I think it must have been July sometime, because I was outside the car when you called me, because, again, I've not had much luck with internet over the past couple of years. That was the only place I could get internet. And there was literally wasps flying around everywhere. I was trying to battle the wasp.
I remember that, yeah.
Call to you. I was absolutely roasting about 40 degrees.
I think we had a bit of artist time. I think Andrew finished the project, so we had a bit of time, and it's sort of a bit of fun. I mean, it's just for us, it's a fun project, really. It's not like, I mean, we may or may not make money out of it. It's more of a sort of, because we've been working on this very serious driving, a project to teach you to drive. It's a very serious kind of driving simulator thing we've been working on for a long time. Right. So it's just a chance to do something a little bit like we let you hair down and run around stupidly. Yeah, I think that's the logic.
That's definitely the vibe of Formula Retro Racing, right? Yeah. It's just good, simple, honest fun in many respects, and it's quite refreshing for that.
And I kind of grew up with these games in the early to mid-90s. Used to live near Great Yarmouth, which had a strip of arcades along the seafront.
Oh, nice.
And in school, every weekend we used to go down and see what the latest racing games were. When like Daytona and Retro Racing came out, they were like amazing. So I wanted to recreate the kind of look and feel, the kind of atmosphere of those games. So even things.
Yeah, and I wanted to drive in San Francisco, which was obviously something we couldn't do in the original games. So, although when we actually did it, it's sort of based on San Francisco, but it does look like San Francisco. But it's not a road in San Francisco you've ever driven on. Inspired by the games that were inspired by San Francisco, I think you see the vibe.
Like. Yeah, I did go a bit crazy on the original. Even stuff like the menus having the countdown timer, like the old arcade machines did, and all that sort of stuff. I think helped give it the kind of old school feel with the chiptune music, which seems to divide opinion. A lot of people hate the retro music, but others seem to absolutely love it.
It's Tom here to interrupt this episode, which I hope you're enjoying, to say if you'd like to support the show, we have some affiliate links in the podcast description. We have them for Buzzsprout if you decide to create your own podcast, or sim racing and gaming equipment companies like Fanatec, Track Racer, and Moser. It doesn't change the buying experience for you at all, but if you click the link and decide to purchase something, we may earn a commission that helps us to keep going with the podcast. That's it for now. Thank you very much. Back to the interview.
So this world tour, for example, I believe I'm correct in it's scheduled and releasing multiple platforms when it is finalized, correct? Whereas previously, obviously, you were saying there, okay, you did a couple of versions and then it came out on different platforms over time.
Yeah. So,
any particular challenges with doing all that for the, in one go, or what's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. it's to get more bang for our buck in terms of marketing, I think, is the logic.
Ah, okay.
Like, you know, right. It's like, because if you release in a sort of incremental way, you just can't get as much pickup, can you, off people?
Cause, yeah.
You know, that's the challenge, obviously, is synchronizing all the, getting everything through QA is a challenge.
Yeah, getting the QA through QA, especially on consoles, is an absolute nightmare. Which I thought might be easier this time because essentially it's kind of the same game, but a lot has changed since the original now. So, the original didn't even have the original on PlayStation and Xbox didn't even have localization, so you can only play it in English.
I didn't realize that actually. This time around it's different, is it?
Really?
Yeah, we've got ten languages. I think we've got 10 languages this time around.
That is a lot more work, yeah.
Yeah, we did that as part of the Switch. I'd forgotten that. We did that as part of the Switch port. So we've always had a kind of global first approach to the Switch because obviously, you know, it's only, well, I guess half the Switch market is in English, but half of it isn't. So it's like, we've done some difficult languages as well.
Yeah, I mean, looking back now, if I'd have known it was going to be so successful, probably would have done the multiple languages on the original.
Well, that's hopefully where this one can help out. And so there's the news today that there's going to be the Kickstarter on the 1st of February. And so is that to help add even more features, right? I think it mentions in the release online multiplayer, for example. So would this funding help the addition of those new features?
Absolutely. I mean, the online multiplayer won't be at release on console. That'll be as a result of the Kickstarter involvement, I think.
Right.
And then the other thing was to try and build community and have that, have people put in input and help us, you know, some of the, I can't talk to the Kickstarter precisely because I didn't write it all, but some of them involve people being able to kind of, contribute to the tracks and customize the tracks and that. So it allows us to have more tracks but also allows us to reflect what people, because it's such a simple game, but it's then you're like, well, what are we going to do with it? Where do we take it? So I think that's what community can bring to it, isn't it, really?
A, it's kind of funding, a little additional funding, but B, it's getting the community involved, which, I mean, if Twitter's had anything to show us, I mean, literally every tweet which goes out, the response is amazing. So,
It's just a really good place to. And particularly if we're going to do a Steam, we're keen to do a Steam release and we're keen to do a VR release on Steam and probably down the line a VR release, if that makes sense. But it's kind of building up, some of that's just building up people testing it, trying it. We put the public demo out quite early on Steam because we wanted to get feedback from people. We wanted to check it works. And it's really hard nowadays to be noticed. I think there's a lot of content released all the time. And we just
want to kind of,
but it's such a fun game. I don't want people to miss out on it.
Is it yourself or Andrew making the VR elements?
So that's Ben, who's our VR programmer.
Oh, you did say that.
Yeah, so Ben's doing all the VR. Well, Ben's a VR nut. He's one of those people who spend 8 hours working in VR in the office and then 2 hours, 3 hours playing a VR game after he finishes working in the office. We've done it in a really smart way, which I think was Ben's idea, which is we're talking about, because the thing about VR games is what do you do when you're not playing the game in VR? I mean, how do you interact with all the menus and all that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So we've leveraged the whole idea of it being a retro arcade game. And I love going to the retro arcades now and playing on the cabinets and actually driving and sitting there. So we've made a 3D little arcade room. It's a bit skanky. Cool. And we made a 3D arcade cabinet as if the game had been made in 1990 and it had come with a really nice cabinet. So you sit down in VR and then you basically, when you're interacting with all the menus, you're actually interacting with it as if it was a, an arcade machine. And then you can play, and that's pancake mode, as Ben would call it, as in you play. You can actually play in that mode as well. I don't know if you can on the current build, but the intention is you can sort of play in that way if you want. So if you're not, like I am, I'm a man of a certain age, and not overly comfortable with VR because, driving in VR can be quite sickness inducing. So it's like getting travel sick, really.
Mm.
But you can play in VR, but not in VR in the sense of in 3D VR where you're playing as if you're playing an arcade cabinet.
Ah, with you now. So, oh, that sounds very neat. Looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, it's great. It's totally mind-blowing, actually. And then you can drop in and play in VR. A couple of the levels, the Vegas level just looks incredible because it's got like all the neon stuff in the sky. It's just amazing.
Right. So the question, I guess, suppose, Andrew, is do you have any like aims or goals for this, for the World Tour sequel? Is there an expectation now?
To be honest, I mean, sales will be good, obviously.
Right, yeah.
Sales will be good, but for me, it's all about fun of it. I mean, I don't know if John's already said this, it was all about making games that kind of we want to play.
Of course.
To be honest, actually seeing people enjoying the game is good enough reward. But for myself, one of the goals was literally to address all the problems of the first one, which I think we've definitely done, and more. When we first started talking about this version, it's supposed to be just wasn't even really supposed to be a sequel, it's just like an expanded edition, maybe a couple of tracks. Now it's got like, I don't even know what number count tracks is, last count. Many more tracks.
And it might expand after Kickstarter as well, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. There's like, I think there's 16 tracks now, and then the intention is to add some more on the back of the Kickstarter, so, yeah.
Yeah, more cars. But it would be good just to keep expanding it, whether it's DLC or just through updates.
Yeah.
Just keep it growing, improving, and updating it based on feedback. This is the first time I've ever done, or been involved with Discord for any games, so it's interesting to see how that goes, and I usually shy away from social media, so to do a Kickstarter, Discord, and my activity on Twitter is quite exciting, it'd be interesting to see what fans think, and
they will think everything. But it's your job to filter out what's actually possible and relevant, isn't it? And that's all part of the fun.
yes.
That's been a really interesting conversation, and I'm really glad also we got there in the end. I was worried at the minute. I thought, oh, we might not be able to get it sorted. But
yeah, sorry, it's been so...
No, don't apologise. I really appreciate you're in like a cafe or a bar or something, so I really appreciate your time. I guess closing thoughts then, just so I'm correct, it's still planning on release on March on PlayStation and PC and Switch and Xbox, but then the Kickstarter element is to get the sense of community, and we'll add some future things as well. And you're planning on keeping the game updated in the future somehow.
Definitely. The idea is to keep this one there, so particularly, keep, because it's going out as a, and as when you were off, Andrew, I said it's going out as a physical product. So the idea of keeping it kind of is just like, we are under pressure to try and make a slightly bigger game, I guess. So it's trying to make it a bigger game. So whatever that looks like, I'm not quite sure. Hopefully the community can help us work out what they...
Yes.
Obviously more tracks, but then... And we've got a lot more cars. How many more cars have we got now? Five different...
I think it's 10 now. 10 cars.
That's good. Yeah.
Five kind of touring / muscle cars. And,
yeah, it's not just single-seaters, is it, this time?
No. And we got a really... I don't know if the demo has the old kind of 1940s kind of... I don't know, we seem to call it a cigar car, seems to be the name. It's, I don't know what the technical name is. It's like... I think it's an old Lotus or something.
So I know the style you mean, like a Cooper or a Lotus. Yeah. Unless we've missed something, I really wish both of you the best luck with the finished development. I'm guessing it released, but then also the continued support afterwards. And the Discord and the tweets and community. Thank you so much to John and Andrew for their time. Formula Retro Racing World Tour is, as I say, available now on Xbox, PC and Nintendo Switch. But not only that, on the traction.gg website, linked in this podcast description, we have a full written review. We've also got a video review as well, including some of the footage of the extraordinary VR features that are part of this indie release. So do check that out. Again, link to the description. And also on the website, we've got news of the PlayStation launch date if you're interested as well. The reason we cover Formula Retro Racing World Tour is because we really like it and we enjoy it. And part of Traction.gg's remit to the world, to you the listener and the reader and the watcher of the videos, is that we cover all types of racing games. Cars, motorcycles, indie arcade releases to full-fat simulations with subscription fees. So the broad spectrum is covered, so we might get more people into sim racing because we've covered something accessible for a younger audience, or alternatively, we might get sim racers to play something a bit more different from time to time. Any opinions about that, please let us know on podcast@traction.gg, that's the email address. Also, thank you very much for using our affiliate links, that keeps us going. And please don't forget to follow and subscribe on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favourite podcast app. And we'll be back with a brand new episode soon. Keep it pinned.